Okay.
Is the remote working?
It's actually working. Thank you. So, this is the title of my final project. American Zen Buddhists Meet Evangelical Christians. And I wrote the paper, took several months, and turned out that after I wrote that, I really feel like presenting it in a really different way. And so I decided to use a lot of pictures. And just pictures that would remind me of some aspects of the project. And so hopefully those pictures would, I can write on the pictures to talk about it. So I apologize for people who may be much more comfortable with the written words here, a lot of it here, but it's more of a kind of visual thing and with my words. Also, it's my first time to use PowerPoint, so that may be interesting too. Let's see what the next one is. Point there. Just first wanted to introduce you to the participant communities. So this is this Zen temple, Zen center that actually I'm part of it, and this is my teacher. And these are the kind of example of people who are here in Zen Center. You can sort of tell that they are wearing kind of traditional Japanese Buddhist robe, and you know, see this ritual attire, and there's some calligraphy and the Japanese type altar, and there's a little, I think it's some kind of Buddha figure here. So we keep Japanese form, although actually, as you can see, all of these people are white American people, and language used is predominantly just English. So that's our Zen center. And then,
the teacher is a white person also?
Yes, this guy. And his wife is also our teacher. Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's right. They trained in Shasta Mountain in California. But the lineage is Japanese, so that's our distinction. And then this is the Evangelical Biblical Seminary. These are both local. And well, this came from their website. And I just wanted to show this kind of the young guy with kind of nice smile and with guitar, and there's some words from I think it's the Old Testament, just to show the kind of sense of how they are. And this is, I put this because this is the campus, and it's huge. And compared with this one, we have this small church building and two regular houses. That's all we have. So in terms of that, I just wanted you to kind of get the sense of this group and that group have that kind of differences too. And okay. Oh, by the way, if you have questions, just like Barbara did, and anytime you can jump in. This is southeast, both southeast actually. Yeah. Gotta get used to.
Maybe you can point it back.
Oh, really?
This is the last time you before the event, it was
working. Oh, it moved.
Because
yeah, oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah, this is much better. And the way I did the final project was actually what I would call a collage of essays. So I wrote, these are actually representative of the essays. You can sort of tell that I was really trying to avoid using words here. I probably should explain a little more, but there are basically three groups of essays. One is about like my own path, because you know, who facilitate and who wrote this paper is very important factor. So this is about me, and this is about how kind of logistics and how those two communities are, Zen Temple and this Biblical Seminary, and how this came about. Actually, this whole dialogue came out of the friendship between my teacher and one of their teachers. So that's how it started, which is very important because this kind of dialogue is sometimes hard to start. So that's why it was easy for us to do. And there's a whole bunch of essays came out from my experience of being in the dialogue and facilitating the dialogue. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Thank you for pointing that out. So, I will be very confused to try to tell you all about all of these. So, I would pretty much focus on the pictures that I put in and the aspects of the dialogue that the picture would remind me, so that I can be, I can just look at this and talk about it. This is kind of my way to avoid looking at my notes so much, because somehow my brain doesn't work that well if I do that. With this one, maybe, so this is the only time I will really talk about all those essays, so I'm going to just talk about a little bit. This little one is about, this is about father and son, so my dad and me. So there's this connection and some important connection even that has something to do with this dialogue too. So I wrote that, and then this is about me growing up, how I grew up in terms of like spiritual practice. And this little essay is about my experience of Christianity, because I was born in Japan and grew up in Japan, so didn't grow up in Christianity, so I had a different experience. And then this is about Zen practice and process work, which are the two things that I've been doing the past few years. So I wanted to make some connection between my Zen practice and process work. Then this one, so this is about my Zen center, and this is about this biblical seminary. And then this one is about the friendship between those two teachers, my teacher and one of their teachers. They actually met in one of those interfaith conferences that are actually happening around here once in a while. And they got to know each other, and so that eventually led to inviting each other to their communities, and then we decided that, okay, their students should have some dialogue between each other, and that's how this whole dialogue came out. And the dialogue actually was, we did it in four different times, the first one, second one, third one, the fourth one. And roughly speaking, we did, first one was a self-introduction, because we didn't really know each other. As a student, we didn't know, so that was our self-introduction. And the second one wasn't planned, but mostly we talked about like theological differences, our like religious practice attitudes difference. And third one, we talked about mostly about abortion issue, which is like a social issue that we expected to like divide us. Divisive issue for us, because as communities we have very different approaches to abortion. And also this is about homosexuality. Again, there's a very different attitudes between us, so we talked about that. So that's kind of a sequence of how the dialogue proceeded. And I'm not going to talk about all of this. This would be very confusing. So if you have a question,
Is that on?
Isha, are you active in both communities?
Good question. Thank you.
Evangelical Christian. Yeah.
I am active in here, in Zen Temple, and so as I said, this is my teacher. So I go there at least 3 times a month, and just to hold Sunday service and go to some classes. So this is my community. This one was pretty much unknown to me, and the connection was through this teacher and one of the teachers. So, yes, thank you for asking, because that's why we did a self-introduction first, because we were really strangers to each other.
I have one quick question. Yeah. Are you the only Japanese person in your temple?
That's a good question, too. And the answer is yes. Yes, we have about probably somewhere around 100 active members, and don't see any other Japanese person. Thank you for good questions, actually. So now I want to get into, let's see what happens. And this is, I think, I kind of set up to talk about myself a little bit, because one of Leaf Democracy book by Arnie, there's this quote about your own personality is a key to conflict work. And I've been thinking about it ever since I started MACF too, so I just wanted this quote here. And this is painting or drawing or whatever I did like years and years ago, is just to show that like what's in my world. There are this innocent boy, and there are some plants, and this was way before I got into Buddhism, but already there's like kind of like a lotus flower and stuff here, so just pretty interesting, and there's some tree stumps. It's kind of, you know, serious, stressed out guy, which is also an aspect of me. And it says legs, which I used to run a lot, and stuff like that. It's just kind of sense. Also, how things are kind of scattered, and at the same time, if you look really hard, there is some kind of balance here, which is also kind of my life too. So, and what else did I want to talk about here? I don't think so. Okay. And then there's another picture. This is even stranger. But, so this is like kind of a guy with a temper, and sometimes just, you know, in Japan, your stomach stands up means that you're angry. And this is like my stomach is exploding, and has some kind of, I don't know, like sharp tongue. Sometimes I do that, and there's a part of me that likes like a pretty flowers, and then this is kind of like just only one person in the world kind of situation where the solitude. Yeah. What?
Did you say when you painted or drew this whole thing we're looking at?
These are about 20 years old.
It's kind of amazing how your final project is in lots of separate written collages, and this is like the collage.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. And it's like my affection for bugs here. Natural trees and scenery. It's like everywhere. So, and this is a guy who is like painting on the door. So And actually, my essays, and I was hoping that my essays would be read like that, just kind of different things, but there is some common thing if you really read them.
Are you including your pictures in your project?
What?
Are you including these pictures in your actual finished project?
Not yet. I could.
They're beautiful. I'd love to, yeah.
I know.
And like what Yelena says, that like the connection between the method of the project of collage of essays and this, like right. From 20 years ago, it's brilliant.
Yeah, so it's really neat. Mm. Yeah, thank you. So this is, if you remember, talked about my dad and me relationship and how it like influenced me. This you may or may not know, but in my childhood memory, when I see this is usually about the Japanese war. When we were fighting the war against the U.S., we were using this flag. So it's kind of like my current flag, but it has all these kind of stripes. And the wartime, my dad was a soldier. And he was in a very, very, very bad place in terms of battlefield, like most Japanese soldiers were killed. And there's this, the officer would say, you just fight to death. Don't expect to stay alive. And somehow, so his attitude was, not that he really told me, but he survived. Where like 95% of people were killed, he survived. And so I'm imagining there's some conscious decision on his part that said, maybe not this. So he spent some time in Hawaii, war prison, and learned a lot about the US culture and befriended with a US officer. Actually, I had a good time. And then at the end of the war, there's this Genbaku, Hiroshima and Nagasaki happened. So this, again, it's not like my dog told me, but just reading and finding out about what happened at that time, my sense is that that was really hard for him because he started to think like Americans and dreamed of Japan after the war as kind of like American democracy style. And then this happened, and in my sense that when you were actually, you were Japanese and you tried to befriend this American, and when this happened, I think it would be really hard. So then after the war, this is our flag, but then after the war, that was when I came. I was born 8 years after the war. And when I was a child, he did not really say anything about what one should do or one should not do. Very, very quiet about that. And my sense was that he couldn't ally with this, and he could not really ally with this either. So he was kind of blank that way. He felt blank, and that really, I got that because I was his son. And my sense is that the message I got was something like, my, you know, son, I don't know. I don't know, you figure out. I don't have anything to teach you, you know, you just go out and find whatever is right for you. So this is kind of my like miss of life. And this is another aspect of me that sometimes drive people crazy, that I wouldn't, like, why would I not go from here to here? Instead, I do this. And takes a long time, and but I noticed that I do that, so I just, that's why I put it here. It's just a kind of labyrinth approach to whatever. And somehow it fits me. And also, I think because of my, the way I was brought up, like not believing anything in system, one system, I feel like I have to go around things to make sure that nothing is behind that I don't see. So that's why I kind of try to kind of go around many times.
Gil, do you know that in Christian churches there often is this drawing on the floor for people to do walking meditation?
Yeah, I saw the pictures in the web. Yeah. Is it some kind of prayer?
Walking meditation.
Yeah.
It's an integration of, it's deep democracy.
Oh, really?
Actually, if you ever wanted to do it, they do it at the Trinity Cathedral just down the road.
Oh.
There's regular labyrinth walks.
Oh, really?
At Trinity Cathedral, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
They do it at
PSU every month. Really? Oh. Oh, I would like to try that.
You do it already.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But to see the fellow people who do that too would be. And this is another, it's kind of like that, you know, this is a vortex and this kind of approach.
Nikki, was this also done about 20 years ago?
This probably is a little newer. It's probably about 10 years ago. Well, I'm not sure if I have much to say about this one. I just wanted to show it. Huh?
It explains.
Really? And this is another aspect of me being kind of, well, not kind of, but like introvert. So I have this like a wall protecting me, and I have this myself and some trees and some fruits and some plants and a little horse and nice world in me in the. And the outside world is kind of, well, this one is kind of like a nuclear holocaust type thing, you know, everybody's dead, everything's dead. And I have this strange, kind of like an onion type, like plants that's protecting me. This like inside and outside and this protection was also one of the themes in the dialogue too, that the way it manifested was that people come to the dialogue and talk about, for example, the church people would talk about, well, when I told my church friend about this dialogue, they would just shake their head. And so there's something about don't mingle with the wrong crowd. Now, I had that experience with my fellow members of the temple too, that I talked to one senior member about, so I was kind of excited. So I said, you know, we are going through this dialogue with the Christian people. And she simply said, oh, that would be annoying to me. And I was really disappointed. Yeah, so there is some, but this is this protection thing. You know, if you have this specific religious practice, you don't really want, you know, like carelessly exposed to whatever out there. And so that was my understanding anyway. And then in the dialogue, people would talk about the, you know, outside people's criticism. But that was like, you know, ghost, perfect ghost. We didn't want to, nobody wanted to take on that role. And as a facilitator, I thought about it, but I was like bound by the sense that now this time, this is a dialogue with us having a friendly discussion. I didn't want to bring in the people who were critical of this. So that happened too. And but now, that was like a year and a half ago when I was really not so good at intervening, and I probably today I would say something about it, because that was so much of a third party and so much of a ghost, and that would be very exciting to somehow bring it in. Oh.
Just an observation. I'm really struck, Nikki, about how much of a lot of your artwork resembles Indigenous Australian artwork. Really? Really. In a lot of spots and the colours. It's very, very Indigenous Australian.
Oh, where? Here?
Just the style and the dots and
those
wormy root creatures and the geckos before in previous ones and the lizards and
really?
It's like classic Indigenous Australian art.
Oh.
It's amazing.
Thank you. I didn't know that. Wow, okay. I'm glad I'm doing this then. I'm just in love.
I didn't know you were such an artist, Nikia. Who knew? It's really beautiful to see. With the original pictures, what are they done on? Are they like small in a notebook or are they?
It's really small.
Pictures? Small.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. They're a little bit like those, I'm thinking of those Middle Eastern, like Persians, Persian miniatures. That last one reminded me of. So you got a lot of different cultural influences in what you do. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And the cartoons.
Yeah.
And this requires some explanation, obviously. there's a ghost couch. This was what?
Going for something.
Oh yeah. This was. This is during the last the fourth dialogue. We talked about the homosexuality issue, and one of the participants, a Buddhist participant, was an openly gay person. And so this is the guy. And he talked about his experience, and he was very, he was very solid. He was not upset. He just calmly stated his point of view, and he said he just wanted to be heard. So that's him.
What's this one?
This guy is one of the Christian people, and he was, what was happening was he approached this guy, and like after like 0.5 seconds after this, he would kind of gently touch his thigh, and like he had this really sweet smile, and he started to talk about his experience in high school, where gay student hit on him and he was afraid. So he was talking about his homophobic experience. At the same time, there was this nice man-to-man, gentle, intimate touching happening right in the middle of the whole, there was about, I forgot to tell you, there are 6 Buddhists and 6 Christians. So we are 12 of us. And we had the same people every time. And here what I wanted to say was that this guy was really good and courageous about being there and facing the Christian people and just say his peace. And at one point, one Christian person said, that homosexuality is a sin in the Bible. But she just kind of calmly said that, and he was just listening to it, just really calmly. And we had this kind of nice atmosphere of just, you can say things and you can hear things. But at the same time, in some way, it's very much the tone and the culture and the way we spoke was just kind of regular culture or the mainstream culture. He was speaking in a mainstream language, and so here what I thought was remarkable was that most of men, especially in American culture, were shy about between men, like gentle touching, and but culturally it's minority, and that was actually happening right here. So that gave me a lot of like really inspired me the difference between as a minority, because I'm Japanese and in some way I'm a minority here. And as a Japanese, I noticed that in me there are two things. One is talk about Japanese culture myself in English style or American style. And then the other is just in Japanese, which is, I had a lot of experience here because I had some fellow Japanese people here. So sometimes I'm just being Japanese, and there's cultural difference. So I thought, to me, it was very important that the two ways of minority expressing themselves, that the one is to learn the majority's language and play the part, which is very important. And then the other one is to just show yourself as you. So this guy really taught me that, so I just wanted to draw something. Let's see if I... And this again is it's a sense of how I do things. This is also kind of like a collage, and just colors and shapes, and trying to find some kind of balance. And this one is a little bit about somebody is actually enclosed here, kind of similar to the previous picture that enclosed here and protected from the outside thing. At the same time, this guy is like dead. So this is an interesting image that I had. I just wanted to just show that. And this is this guy, this is called Nio. This is like a fierce warrior. It's a protector. This guy usually stands like if you go to a Japanese temple, there's a huge gate when you go into the temple premises. There's a huge gate, and there's two columns, and in each column there will be something like this, somebody like this. So it's kind of like in my picture of this, you know, the onion thing. The protector was depicted as a wall there. But in here, it's a fierce warrior, and he's facing outside and trying to protect something that's like vulnerable and alive inside. Somehow, I was impressed by his face and stuff, so I just put it here. And this also actually, it's about a group process. This morning, but there's something about this guy looks so strong and going out and kind of speaking for the temple. And in the temple, there's some really very intimate things happening, because religious practice is very intimate. But this guy is a little, you know, sacrificing his sensitivity and just trying to show and fight for the subtle and vulnerable and intimate practice, and just to face the outside world with very strong warrior strength. So I thought that was really interesting, that was really reminded me of what happened in the group process today. And this picture is about...
Before you go on, how did the previous picture relate to the dialogues? Did you say that? I'm not sure if I caught that.
In the dialogue, in a dialogue that the people who are angry people who are angry at the participants of the dialogue, like my senior member who really frowned at this idea of talking to people from someone. So they are playing the role of this protector who just push away the potentially harmful, like, outside influence. That's why they look so fierce. Yes. This is, I think there's, yeah, another one. I couldn't find the picture of the other, another one actually.
So, R is like a beginning. Is ending.
Yes.
You know that? So, maybe you unconsciously chose this one. Ah, so.
Ah.
Do you know why?
Yeah, enlighten me. What? Are you asking me? I don't know. I have no idea. Do you want to say something or?
I don't know, you know that.
Okay. No, I can't really tell. It's really secondary to me. Maybe there's something secondary in this picture that I don't really get.
Well, you say it guards the temple.
Yes.
And you were showing us all the pictures of enclosure and the outside, the inside versus the outside, the protected inner sphere and the destroyed and evil and scary outer world. So I think that's, you were explaining that that's like a gatekeeper or...
Yeah, this is a gatekeeper, that was my thought.
Yeah. And gargoyles, you know gargoyles in Christian churches? They do the same thing.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, his face looks like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So that one is really secondary to me, so I don't think I can get there in the next 15 minutes or something. But maybe, who knows? And this one I chose it for, to explain some of the, like my Zen practice experience and process work. And then, well, maybe this is like your consciousness. This girl is looking out, and there's some really clear picture of something right in front of you. And that's like the focus of your attention right now. But at the same time, there's some little hand of this dinosaur sticking out, and this little big tortoise or something. And there are some like obscure creatures here and there. This is kind of like a field of our consciousness. There's something really in the center of your focus. And then there's some other things like kind of about to come out. And as you can see, this will end up, you know, underwater pretty soon. It's like going down. And then the next moment there will be something else. So sitting meditation is kind of like this. You know, you will be thinking about something like, my favorite thing is like, oh, did I turn off the stove this morning when I left home? So I would be thinking about that for a while, and then like a minute later I would be thinking about, oh man, my neck itches. And then I was totally absorbed in that, and the next moment I would be thinking about something else. But the Zen sitting is just kind of not really, in a way, try not to be totally identified with any of those. It's just when they come, it's okay, and they just disappear in underwater, it's okay, kind of thing. Then you get some, actually, you get fluidity about what you're paying attention to. Instead of trying to, like, hang on to this or hang on to this, and making a big story about that. And also, it's kind of, in a way, it's a deep democracy. You're actually paying attention to whatever comes up. try not to, you're not trying to say, oh, not you right now. It's more like paying attention to whatever is there, everybody. So that's actually what we are taught in Zen meditation, which is a lot like deep democracy. To me, the process work is similar because, you know, we talk about that kind of stuff too. You know, the only interesting thing is that facilitator is actually, in a way, in this ocean too, in the process work, the group process, because as a one person in the whole group, we don't have actually the whole view. I only have my view, and to recognize that and trust that the whole group would do well, and then my job is to just offer my point of view, is I think my sense of process work. And so in my understanding, the Zen is more like you have a little bit of advantage of observer's rank. So that's why my style of facilitation is actually, if you notice, when I did facilitation this morning, I was standing here and I would be talking about this is happening and this is happening. But if you notice that I wasn't moving much, I had this kind of privileged space of, not a privileged, but I still have this sense of, you know, being this one in meditation, which is actually not bad, but I would like to be able to be more aware that I'm actually not on this solid platform, but I'm also in the ocean, in it. So that's why I wanted to show this picture. This is probably like from one of the dreams I had, like, again, you know, 15 years ago or something.
And the camera in your mind is trying to track sort of how this fits in.
Yeah.
And I imagine this is also, you had one essay about Zen
and process work, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And if you really, you know, want to go into it, I think reading that text would be interesting. And this one, I think I said we talked about the abortion on the third dialogue. So I just put in this fetus picture. This one is very small, it's probably like 2 months old. To just have this kind of picture, it's like already for me it's a little shocking to see it that way, with all these eyes and nose and head and little hands and little legs. The really interesting thing that happened in this one was that, well, I should tell you the background. The Buddhist were actually very liberal. This is not a general statement, it's just a fact for our Zen temple. In our Zen temple's members are very liberal, and 25 to 30% of our membership is actually like non-heterosexual people, homosexual, gay, lesbian, bisexual people. So we have very strong pro-choice like bent too. So we have several times. So one of the Buddhists said officially, "I am pro-choice." This interesting word, officially, because some of us, not them, actually the Buddhist people, talked about some of the experiences of actually not totally in line with this pro-choice view. Like one person was a nurse and she was working in an abortion clinic, and she said after seeing, so first she was really angry about those people who protested abortion. They were just giving a hard time to them, her and doctors, you know, outside. And but after seeing all those fetuses in the, like she said, buckets and buckets of fetuses, she said she started to understand why they were upset. But still, and she was still solidly, you know, hold on to this view that's important. And then there's this, the expression unwanted baby came out, which I think I put it because it was kind of, this was a little hard for me, and because my wife was adopted. So she was actually an unwanted baby. Her mother didn't want to do abortion, so she had a baby, but she gave her away. And somebody said something about an unwanted baby, like somehow like, rather than having an unwanted baby, we should have abortion. So that was a hot spot for me, that I didn't handle well. I got a little knocked out about that. And then again, one Buddhist person said he was born just because his mother could not do abortion because it was illegal. She told him that you were there because abortion was illegal. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. So I thought that was really pretty amazing statement. And then there's somebody else who actually had an experience of abortion, saying it was really hard. And again, this person is also saying she would support for choice. The emotional experience was very hard. So there's a very interesting contrast of lots and lots of personal experience, and most of them painful, coming up from the Buddhist side. And the Christian side was a little more, a little more abstract about that. They would say, oh, how about the guilt? And well, this was a very interesting thing they said. God takes care of the baby. So what that means is that if you abort the baby, you will take away the opportunity for the gods to take care of the baby. Just, I thought that was a very interesting statement, so I just put it here. I wanted to think about it later too. And this is something about who makes a decision, which was very hot topic. Here, one Buddhist person said, well, nobody really decides. It's kind of interesting too. And also, least suffering. Suffering is a big concept in Buddhism. You know, whole Buddhism is about alleviating suffering. And so this person was saying, oftentimes the least suffering path is actually an abortion, although abortion itself is huge suffering. Gosh, I'm beginning to feel really affected by this subject, so I don't know, maybe I should move on, or
Same.
Yeah, it's, I think, I just realized that it would be really hard for facilitate on this topic still. Like, it would be hard for me. I would need to do more inner work. This is, I try to have some structural understanding about the minorities, because both Zen Buddhists and Christians came into this dialogue feeling like minorities. And somehow we are kind of assuming that, well, they are more of the majority. For us, that was really simple because we are Buddhists, and look at Buddhists in America, you know, the United States, there aren't so many. So it was very, we thought, so we are the, what is that? okay, we are the minority, and they are Christians, so they are not a minority. So that was our understanding coming into the dialogue. Then, when we opened the dialogue, there was a lot of comments from Christians, people, evangelical Christian people, that saying they were feeling very minority. And the expression some of them were using was like, surrounded by secular people who really do not believe, although they are kind of Christians. So for those evangelical Christians, they were feeling like, one of them even used the expression like ostracized by the society, which was very, very surprising for us.
Thanks. Mikhail, is there a definition how you would delineate evangelical Christian from a regular Christian, if that's the right word? Like what makes a Christian evangelical as opposed to just Christian?
Okay, that's a good question because I didn't know that. And when we started the dialogue, I asked around and I asked to my co-facilitator who was in this group. And my understanding is that some Christians actually see like the Bible as a metaphor. So it's important, but we don't take it literally attitude. And evangelical Christians or fundamental Christians are more like more literal. So for example, like the biggest thing is that Jesus resurrection. The fact that, I'm just taking their role. The fact that he was actually resurrected physically was the really important piece. This actually, my co-facilitator told me that if that is not true, it doesn't work for her. She could not be a Christian.
If it were just symbolic.
If it's just symbolic, it does not work for her at all. So it's really very, very strong.
This is not only for many Christians. I know Orthodox Christians belong to the same category, and Catholic Christians.
So Nancy's saying it's not just these people, but the Greek Orthodox people and Catholic people. Okay.
At least where the resurrection is.
Thank you. Yeah, that was thank you for saying that, because I had some good talk with my co-facilitator. She was an evangelical Christian, and after all the dialogues, we met and debriefed, and that was the last thing that we talked about. And I didn't know how to talk to her about that. It's like I was knocked out when she clearly said that. It's like, yeah, anyway, that was a long story, but it was an important piece. It's a very important piece to understand evangelical Christians and some other Christians. And this one, let's see. In this picture, I'm saying that this is mainstream. It's kind of Earth, big thing, safe place, and also kind of invisible place, because your mainstreamness is usually invisible to you. So that's why I thought, well, it's kind of invisible. And this is. Like being homosexual, being colored, being non-English speaking. These are examples of being minorities. And this I put this because this is actually the common thing that we had. The religious practice itself it has some like selfless nature, like as opposed to more of a kind of desire-driven and, I am important, I need something kind of attitude. it's much more mainstream, I think. That this one is kind of a little minority here. But at least we share that. So there's some comfortable feeling between us. And it appears to be that this is why the similar attitude toward the religious practice itself, although our religions were different, we actually had a really nice time talking before and after the dialogue and stuff. Yeah.
Controversial. What makes the practices selfless? Because the discussions themselves and the tenets that are there don't seem very selfless per se.
Oh. Selfless. Thank you, because I struggled with the word here, which word to put here, and I ended up. The other options I thought about was like humble and humility, because in a way that in the practice we always recognize this. Okay, this is clear for them. You know, Jesus is such an extremely important figure, and in comparison, you are very small. And the Buddhist practice, Zen practice, is kind of similar in a way that we don't have this incredibly strong God concept, but we see ourselves as very small. That's our practice.
So you're saying it's like a big you identity. There's something bigger than us out there.
Right. The recognition that you know that our everyday self is actually pretty small. Okay, yeah. So what else am I going to say? Oh, so this is an interesting thing that because I said first we thought we are the minority and they're the majority because they're Christians. So Christian actually is. Being Christian is actually kind of minority, what is the word? A minority aspect, a majority aspect in this country anyway. In the US, if you're Christian, you probably feel majority and you don't even think that you're a majority because, like Christmas, and you know, just feel comfortable about that. That's being Christian. But what we had among the Zen Buddhists that we didn't think about was like kind of like a rational aspect or scientific aspect of it. Like the science has it's really dominant in our culture. We all respect science. And if you look at these evangelical Christians, they are actually challenging. And they are saying Jesus was resurrected physically. And they have to hold that. And in that sense, they were really feeling minority because this rational and science, if you are comfortable with that, man, you are in majority, very strong majority. So that was the one new thing that we learned, that we had a strong majority aspect here. And this is, this one is just that to say that it's mostly English speaking. We are both mostly English speaking people, and so that way we are majority. And of course, it didn't even come out in the conversation. And it's mostly we are white except me. And this came out in a little bit at the one point in dialogue that me being Japanese was a little bit off topic. But otherwise, it doesn't really come out. Because they're all comfortable being white in this white culture, so it's like nothing. So I thought this would be my kind of structural understanding of the minority issue in this dialogue.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I just find it really interesting that you as a person of color and a person whose mother tongue wasn't English, of those two floating circles, you that like the most minority position in the whole group, and you were the facilitator, and so key in the whole thing that it sort of supports an idea of how much spiritual rank some people can have being far in the minority, or like not in the main, like the mainstream loses spiritual rank because of that unconscious aspect to it, and then the rank that you develop because of being on the outer, and then how you used it in such a positive way to facilitate this kind of dialogue and find commonalities between people who had not so much sense of what they had in common.
Right. I think that was secondary. Yes.
What's there?
Yes, I just... in my mind, it's like, I have to come up with some minority aspects and ping, ping, ping. This was kind of part of the structure, so, you know, it has to be this. But these are just... Really? Yeah, and
this
is actually an issue, because I thought about it too.
Are you Khan? How many people in Khan are these?
What are you asking
back?
I don't know.
Yeah, this is a group process though.
Yeah,
but this is...
I don't want to be Khan.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was... Let's remember that. And this is also about, it's a quote from Ani's Deep Democracy book. When you are in a minority role within a given social or organizational context, you may experience the impulse to hide yourself by identifying with the mainstream so that you will not be hurt. Now, this is... This is actually really... What happened? Let's finish this. I'm gonna finish this, my talk. Related to this, like, came up in a secondary to me, that it's because I have this tendency to hide myself by identifying with the mainstream, which is, I notice that sometimes, that I am more comfortable with like white people in this country. Sometimes I notice it, and then I see like my folks, and I see a different color people, and then I feel little tension. And so I thought this, he really describes it well, that when I'm, this is really also subconscious to me. I don't really consciously do that, but subconsciously, I'm trying to identify with the white people. And so this is, to me, this is like, I want to really deepen this for myself too, and for other people too, that how this works, how we can, I can really use it as a tool. Right now, it's still really secondary. You want to say something?
I'm also aware of the time. But just the way we hide, for instance, you hardly have an accent when you speak. I do that too. I try to not have an accent as a German.
Uh-huh.
So I look to be like an English speaker. But the fact is, there's a lot of information in my accent. That would identify me as a mainstream. There's a lot of power in that accent, actually, I'm finding. So,
thank you.
I dress like local.
Huh?
I dress?
Yeah.
Local.
Yeah.
And I do it.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
I dress non-Indian.
Yeah. Oh, that seems to be a big thing today. Okay. Wow. Yeah, it's a big issue. It's a good topic. Okay. This just shows that this is the end of the presentation. thank you. Yeah, this is the end of it.
Well, thank you very much. That's such a great example of how this ongoing dialogue when dialogue's dialogued about.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was great.
Thank you. Well,
we're done for the day. Yes?
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
It's 9:15.